Okay, our next presenter has been in the current position only for 6 months and has been just presenting his new strategy at the beginning of the month in New York. So I think everybody will be very interested in listening to what he's going to talk. Please welcome George Buckley.
Good afternoon, everybody. How are you? Well, I'm not going to go through the Miranda statement, but what we will do is show you a video, which I think someone around here knows how to launch, Bruce, and let you see what we think about 3M, the sort of pride in the sense that we have in our company, and then we'll get the chance to move very quickly through a set of slides, which are about half of what we showed investors in New York. So let's roll, Bruce, please. Turn the volume up, please. Same to you as it does to me, but I recall saying at our shareholders meeting that you can't watch this video and not come away feeling proud working for 3M. This is one of the great companies of the world. It really is certainly one of the great companies of America, and ingenuity and imagination and innovation are the hallmarks of the company. And so for an engineer, a guy who's an engineer, goes to work for a guy like 3M, it is a wonderful opportunity, frankly speaking. So I'll go through this. I'll give you some quick overview on the portfolio. Next. You can hear it clicking when I press the button. Maybe I'll get a little bit closer here. Oh, that's fine. Excuse me, sorry. No, that's going back. That's just forward. Here we go. Sorry. Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about the portfolio, give you an idea of what businesses we're in. I'll then talk a little bit about our strategy for growth, and then reassure you, hopefully, that we are still committed to operational excellence, and talk a little bit about the portfolio overall and what might come in and what might go out, and then give you an idea on what it all looks like together. So here's the portfolio. We have six reporting segments. They're all, roughly speaking, with the exception of one. They're about $3 billion. They are, with few exceptions, all in the 20-point margin or north of that, and all in the middle single digits. You can see here 6.5, 4.2, 4.7, 6.9, 4.2, and 3.6. All something about north of 1.5 times GDP. All very, very healthy margins, as you can see. Very broad portfolio, as the slide here shows, industrial and transportation, healthcare, in a sense, right at the other end of the spectrum. Display and graphics, right up against front and central in the consumer, in the what seems to be certainly more recently high growth space of electronic communications, and in safety, security, and protection services. Here's what the international sales look like. We have subsidiaries in 69 countries. We are a company that majors on innovation, and so we believe not only should innovation be done in the United States, but should be done overseas. So we're in 33 countries. We manufacture in 79 locations overseas and employ a little shy of 37,000 employees, permanent employees. We also employ quite another tranche of temporary employees overseas. And relatively few people sent from the U.S., and we have sales offices in over 200 countries. So very, very broad portfolio. Something like 61 or 62% of our sales are international. Here's what our historical performance has been. Good return on invested capital is probably the real highlight of the slide here. Little south of 25% return on invested capital. Operating income, again, up in the mid-20s, 24% operating income. Organic growth, a little bit north of GDP, but about 3.8%. And EPS growing at multiples of this sales leverage, so great leverage on the bottom line. The mission, though, is clearly growth. We feel this is the best way to generate shareholder value. This is the place that we go now. We've done a grand job, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years of driving margins from somewhere in the 17 or 18% up into 24%. But now is the time to invest. And using the Gordon Growth Model, we look something like 5.2 times. This is the ratio, I don't know if you've seen this model before, but this is the ratio of value creation from 100 basis points of growth to value creation from 100 basis points of margin. Here's the strategy in summary, you know, when you condense everything down to its bare minimum. The truth of the matter is any company that's successful in the core, especially with the kind of returns that we get, the first place they should go is to drill into the core. So that's the same for us. We'll drill into the core, and we'll try to move toward scale where the markets are large. It's an interesting company. 3M typically has invented the market through participating. Not in all cases, but in many cases. We were the founders of that marketplace. We invented the technology space on which that market was based. But a consequence of that is we didn't always pay perhaps attention to scale in the way that we might have done. So from my perspective, first place to go is to drill into the core. And as you'll see, I think it's the next slide or maybe the slide after that, in markets where they're a little bit smaller, the next place for us to go is try to achieve the number one market share. And the code for that is move towards higher relative share in smaller markets. We have very good growth internationally, and we have very strong presence, as I've already mentioned. So the next piece of the puzzle is to heavy up on globalization. A lot of people have worried about whether 3M has suddenly turned its back on technology. Are we investing less in technology? Are we rethinking that issue? And the answer is no. Technology remains very much part of who we are, not only in the past, but will remain so for many years to come. We understand that in some cases we may have to make some interesting trade-offs of market share and growth, or even margin and growth, and we're prepared to make those as long as we don't necessarily end up going too low. And we're very convinced that the important thing for us to do is to build on our brands, on our technology, people service, and distribution. And here's what the numbers look like. In the organic center, we think this is where our longer-term growth rates will end up, 8% plus and growing. We think we can leverage this into somewhere around the 12 to 15% earnings growth. And no matter what we do, we believe that investment returns are going to lie above 20%. Now, you can well imagine for a guy like me that one of the first things you have to do is try to demystify 3M. You know, 3M is a very broad company, but trying to find a way to reduce it, this slide covers that. Essentially, 3M's fundamental core competency is about applying coatings to backings. Now, you know, let's sort of stick with that for a minute. The coatings and backings are traditionally developed inside our company. And the backings might be, as the slide here says, they could be woven and non-woven fabrics, they could be plastics, they could be steel, they could be paper, they could be cloth, or various kinds of metals. The coatings that we use are adhesives, abrasives, medicines, nanoparticles, or they could be imprinted optical patterns. So think about that as a fundamental concept. 3M is a company that's involved in the business of developing coatings and applying them to backings. It does this, as I put over here on the slide over here, in a very highly precise manufacturing method that involves a sort of large-scale unwinding and winding and then splitting of tapes. And while most people know 3M for its technological prowess, you know, we are very well known for that, but actually there's a light hidden under a bushel basket, and we're often asked about this question. Are GE entering the film market, for example? And the reality is that the unsung heroes of 3M are the manufacturing people out there that take these wonderful technological ideas and turn them into products. So this is a very significant barrier to entry in our place. But if you wanted a simple way to think about 3M, about 80% of our products are covered by this kind of model. But here's where it gets really interesting. We use a technology that we call micro-replication, as pointed out on this slide. Let's pick on this Trizect abrasive over here. This is a photograph of what would look, in most cases, a relatively humble abrasive. But you notice on the surface we have these patterns cut, a little bit like the patterns that are cut in the treads of a tire that squish out the water. Well, this thing squishes out the abraded material. Let's go over here and look at our BEF films, these brightness-enhancing films, where you imprint an optical pattern on the surface of a plastic film. These little V-grooves are actually optical lenses, and we can either put them straight or we even curve them to alter the way in which the image of a, say, a television screen or a telephone is altered. And by the way, these are typically at nanometric sizes. So the ability to take a small optical film and imprint on it a lens that's maybe 100 or 150 nanometers in size is really quite an incredible manufacturing capability. Let's go over here to an example that most of us know and have used. We have our humble Post-it notes. If you look at the diagram here, you see this little sort of sea of mushrooms. And the reason a Post-it note works in the way that it does is when you put the Post-it note down on a surface, a piece of paper, a piece of wood, the reason it sticks and is able to pull back off is you just touch the surface of all this little field of mushrooms. And we imbue the adhesive with elastic properties so that it sort of stretches and pulls off and doesn't leave the surface with any kind of contamination. So what we actually do is we take this principle of backings and coatings and then imbue the surface with a microscopic pattern and fundamentally alter the performance of that product. And this is where the technological capability and manufacturing capability of 3M is so important. Now, here's what we do with how we share our technologies. One of the great things about 3M is the fact that it's able to take technologies and replicate them across multiple markets. And having worked for a number of companies in my life, one of the things that companies seem to really struggle with, frankly speaking, is the ability to take a technology. It might develop in one segment, it has ready applications in another, but the organizational boundaries seem to get in the way. That is absolutely not the case at 3M. So let's take a look just at 9 technology platforms here, and then look at these various markets that we apply these to. But this is how we do it. This is how we go about making 3M so strong. We'll take, say, adhesives, and we'll find applications in all of these different markets. We'll take abrasives and do exactly the same. And you notice I haven't just gone off and linked every one of these with every one of these. I've been very careful not to do that. I've not put abrasives in graphic arts, for example, or in healthcare, for that matter. And we do the same with ceramics, and we do the same with all of them. And it's this lattice of applications of technology platforms with markets that makes 3M so powerful as an industrial competitor. And when you visually think about the way that these things link, if you think about this as some kind of Kevlar lattice, and you can imagine that if, say, for example, adhesives go bad in architecture and construction, it doesn't in any way weaken the way in which this lattice is applied, this technology sharing that 3M is so wonderful at. Now, here's the real story, though. We had 9 here, but in reality, the diagram should have contained almost 40 different technologies that, if I had drawn them, they would have been all the way down here applied to these markets. And that's the key fundamental strength of 3M. It's why 3M is so resilient to cycles. It's why we're so resilient when one particular market becomes challenging. Let me show you how it happens in practice. Now, most of us have used these humble, what I was trained as an engineer to call an epidioscope, a humble overhead projector that we invented back in 1964. And obviously, while we were inventing that, we learned a lot about lenses, so-called Fresnel lenses that are in the top of this device. Same kind of lenses, by the way, that are in lighthouses. We learned, obviously, then a lot about lens film, because you need films to apply to the product. And then in learning about lens films, we learned about how light reflects inside the film. And obviously, that was the genesis or the birthplace of our optical films business that sprang just from this relatively simple product, an overhead projector. But in reality, that's actually what happened. It was all of these applications in the film business that sprang from this humble, simple overhead projector that we've all used in our lives. But in reality, this is the true story. We took this simple product and took it into all of these various markets, and in point of fact, without going through and torturing you on the detail here, these are all of the products that we invented and replicated from just this simple, humble overhead projector. This is how 3M works. So just to sort of pause for a moment and talk about the role of technology in 3M, rumors of the technology's death in 3M have been greatly exaggerated, I can assure you. It's not only our history, it's very much the engine of our future growth. And we're firm believers, I am personally a firm believer, that the key to success, certainly one of the keys to success, is unfettered, albeit well-directed, innovation. Now, we do have to alter a few things, because companies have to recognize that they can't do everything themselves. And so we'll be out there searching for some disruptive technologies, prospecting for just out of the garage technology developments outside our company, not only inside our company, and certainly making sure that the heart of our methodology going forward is going to be technological differentiated products. Here's a few examples of products that we make, some nice breakthrough products, and you'll be amazed how many of these have that sort of backings and coatings principle involved. Certainly the abrasive does, certainly this laminate does, certainly these do, and these do, and maybe the only exceptions are this one, our advanced composite conductor. By the way, what this thing is a conductor for overhead power transmission lines that has a ceramic fiber core. So you can run this at something like 2.5 times or 3 times the operating temperature that traditional overhead lines run at, and that means you can push something close to twice the power down these cables that you would in a traditional application. And why this is so big is if you've ever worked or looked at investing in utilities, one of the things they really struggle with is getting permits and rights of way. This would allow you on the same rights of way to put twice the power down a right of way. So some examples of our products. Let's talk a little bit about growth now. Basically four building blocks to our growth strategy. Obviously, I'd mentioned earlier, if a company like 3M, indeed any company, especially a company with the kind of returns we get, the first place you should always go is invest in the core. And we'll talk a little bit about more about this, in fact, each one of these in just a couple of minutes. We have very large total international shares and very large growth rates, by the way, internationally, so clearly this has to be part of the puzzle. We will play on the issue of adjacencies and primarily in these market spaces, which I'll talk briefly about in just a minute, but we'll also do some complementary acquisitions to support each of these segments. Obviously, the acquisitions not only build bulk, I mean, that's certainly one part of the issue. I jokingly say sometimes that, have you ever noticed in life that except in cases of clear divine intervention, God is always on the side of the big armies. So we want to grow in our core, but we also sometimes need acquisitions to complement our adjacency plays. We might be short of a technology. We may be short of a distribution that they can help with. And also, in some cases, and primarily the issue of branding. While we have good global brands, in reality, we sometimes need to take local brands that are familiar with the people in that market to help our growth. So let's stick back at that. Let's go back here. I'm speaking about this one now, growing the current core. Let's talk about that. Really four elements again on this one. Without belaboring, it's a constant drill down into that core, the core that you currently own, and making sure that you do everything possible in that core to grow it. The second piece, and if you think about the market as sort of a triangle, traditionally 3M participates in the top end of that market triangle. But we're talking about extending the core, moving down a little bit into the marketplace, but investing in those product white spaces that are at margins above what our competition typically does. I'd mentioned product localization. We'll do some of that, some private labeling work. You know, a lot of people struggle with the issue of private label, but the point is that if the market demands private label and that volume is going somewhere, then why not to us? Because one of the great dangers here is if you let competition into your market space, they can build in, it's classic, you know, they come in at the bottom of the marketplace, they build intimacy with your customers, they build knowledge base, they build technology, and move up the market, and eventually they're putting pressure on the core here. So we want to defend and extend the core as best as we can. Another thing which formalizes a point, but which also a lot of companies don't recognize, and we, by the way, haven't always recognized this ourselves, and that is you have to invent a new future for yourself, because unless you plan for cannibalization of your product stream, let's say, for example, this is our optical films business. An optical film in a television or a telephone compensates for a fundamental deficiency in the product. I won't give you a technological dissertation on why, but I could if you want. But the point is that since it compensates for a deficiency in the product, somebody's going to be working on overcoming that deficiency. And we should be that person overcoming that deficiency. So you've got to go out and deliberately imagine that this is going away and I've got to be the person inventing the product that's going to make it go away. And lastly, building broad-based competencies. What I mean by this is, look, if you're in the optical business, understand and accept that you're in the optical business and build a base that you can recycle around and become a new core later on in the time. Here's a sort of a quick snapshot of some of our businesses. When we talk about getting scale or getting relative share, This is where we think we already have scale or are moving towards scale. A group of businesses that we think we have good relative share or are moving toward it. And then over here, some businesses that we think are subscale. You know what we've decided on pharmaceuticals. But don't conclude necessarily that all of these businesses are ones that we're going to divest, because in RFID, this is one of the great opportunities for investment for the future, in my view. And so you'll see us investing in some of these things, but in other cases, we may consider divesting them. When you're looking at extending the core, if you sort of look at this sort of triangle here and think about this as a market, here's where you classically think of 3M as participating. But what is sometimes little known about 3M is we actually do reach down into these middle markets with secondary brands. Obviously, most people are familiar with Scotch tape and Post-it notes, and even in the industrial areas, our road signs, 100% reflectivity on these things, and even our respirators. But we actually use secondary brands in all of these areas, both in the industrial and the consumer spaces. In fact, in this particular case, we went from the bottom to the top, whereas in these markets, we went from the top to the bottom, and we even use private labeling. So don't get too concerned that we may reach a little bit more into these markets. We've already done it and are very familiar with how this works. Acquisitions and divestitures. I don't know that divestitures are going to be a huge part of what we do, but they'll be part of what we do. Where something, for example, is a sunset technology, or we think the risk profile suggests another owner can extract more value from it, or perhaps over time we can't build scale, or we don't find a way to be able to differentiate technology, we will consider divesting those businesses. On acquisitions, our ideas at the moment are we clearly would like the majority of acquisitions to be EPS accretive immediately, and EVA accretive by the end of year three. They clearly will support our strategic plan. We're not going to be bouncing around all over the place. They're going to be very much focused on our strategic plan and not opportunistic, but designed. As I mentioned here, we are prepared to sacrifice some percentage part margin, but I'll show you about that in just a minute, for some additional growth as long as we're still creating net positive shareholder value. And we do expect returns to remain high. Too complicated a slide for us to go through in great detail, but we have a process where we're looking at growth acquisitions. They clearly will be part and parcel of what we do, looking at high growth and then making sure that they fit and then making sure that they give us returns and we can afford them. One area where we mentioned earlier was these adjacencies or EBOs, emerging business opportunities. The four where we're concentrating initially, and you'll see some announcements on these in due course in the next few months, I believe. Filtration is an area where we already made our first play in Cuno. Track and trace, this is sort of RFID, GPS, those sorts of things. Energy and minerals extraction, this is something, again, that is going to be with us for a long time to come. And food safety, you say, why food safety? It's really food safety and personal safety as much as anything else. But as economies industrialize, one of the first things you notice is that people eat more meat. So China begins to eat more meat. India begins to eat more meat. Eastern Europe does the same. Here's one example that we chose to drill down on, track and trace. And you're essentially answering four questions in track and trace. Who am I? Where am I? How am I? You know, am I working okay? Am I working well? Am I working badly? And how can I take this information in these three questions and take it and improve and advantage me, say, in a supply chain? Trying to find a way to make sure that stuff, say, comes from China to the United States or from Australia to Eastern Europe in a better way. We have all of the assets already in red. We are missing some of these capabilities in black. Give you an example. These track and trace technologies, GPS, RFID, UHFID, you can think of many, many applications, but here I just put up a few, eight of them here. But let's just take a look at one of them. In security, clearly, passports and ID cards, border crossing security, tracking your pets, And this may surprise you, but tracking your children, it is my fundamental belief that within 10 years, every asset of value in the world will be tracked and traced. That's just the way it is. You may not like the Orwellian implications of that, but they're there. And by the way, tracking criminals. And, of course, in medical, we're already present in a number of these sorts of things, but one can imagine tracking records where we're already present. We have a business in that already. Moving assets, tracking samples, pathology samples, histology samples, tracking transplants, tracking patients. And you can go on and on and on and on and on in all of these spaces. And I was only limited on this slide by the amount of things I can put on the slide, not by ideas. We think this is one of the great growth opportunities, frankly speaking, for the future. International growth, let's speak a little bit about this. Typically, the growth rates that we have internationally are 2 to 3x the United States. I've mentioned earlier, 61% of our sales today are outside. We think this is going to be well north of 70% in 2011. India growing at about 40%, China growing at 35%. We expect to be around a billion sales in China, including Hong Kong, by the end of this year. But I want to stress that our intentions on international are not only about these high growth spaces. You cannot afford to leave anybody behind. You cannot afford just to invest in India or just in China when you have huge markets in Western Europe. People are still going to be living here. There's still going to be great penetration opportunities in Western Europe and in the United States. But we will, from time to time, to help facilitate growth, we'll acquire local brands. And the so-called BRICP, as we call them, Brazil, India, China, Russia, and Poland, here's what our assets look like right now. We have a little over 2,000 employees in China, 6 plants. We have another 1,000 or so temporary employees, and you can see here 1 plant in Russia, a little over 200 employees, Poland, 650, Brazil about 3,000. So we have great presence internationally. Here's what our sales growth looks like as we invest in these high growth economies. Going from 2003, you'll see what the circle looked like and how the percentages change. And this is where we think we'll be by 2011. Something around 70% or north of our sales will be international. Let's talk a little bit about operational excellence. Without belaboring all the details here, I have long been a believer that these are the competitive platforms a company competes on: cost, brands, distribution, technology, and service, and people. You cannot give up on any one of these. But if I was going to pick on one or pick on two, cost remains the ultimate competitive deadly weapon. So we've got to focus on cost and operational excellence. But again, here's the hallmark of our company, technology, and that remains very strong, front and central for us. Six Sigma, very important to us, but we'll add lean to it. I'm a big believer in process, but I'm not a believer in putting process in where it doesn't belong. And here's an example of productivity increases. Here's our overhead spending over the last few years, 2001 to 2005. We've got out something in excess of 2 points of margin improvement just from leveraging our overhead. And we think in the next 3 years, there's another potentially 1% of margin improvement is available just from leveraging centralized overhead. Let me give you a real-life example here. This is our Post-it flag manufacturing, and without, again, going into the detail, we don't have time, we take these sort of big jumbo rolls, slit them up into mini jumbos, and guillotine them and pack them in boxes. This is how we used to do it, even as late as 1996. You can see this stuff moved all over hell's acres. I jokingly say inside our company that some of our products had more frequent flying miles on them than the 747 pilot. So we move stuff all over. And of course, as you do that, as you move things around, money sticks to it, time sticks to it, and service level, OTIF, on time in full, as we call it, sticks to it. And here's what we did to straighten out our supply chains in this particular. Essentially one move. And by the way, our WIP went down from 100 days and manufacturing cycle time, 95 days, WIP went down to 20 days and cycle time went down to 15. In our post-it note production, it's 12 hours. So when you find ways to collapse these supply chains, you can drive money out of the system and drive savings in. Let me give you an example here of what happened in our savings in. This is non-material unit cost. Back in 2001, and I very carefully hid the precise data, but this is real live data from our plants. And today, on a two-pipe, we make it for 25% non-material of what we did in 2000. Just by constant focus on cost reductions, constant focus on collapsing the supply chains. So, in summary, if you think about this as traditional, 3M's traditional markets, this top of the pyramid, we're going to reach down a little bit in here, and we think in the core, by the way, 5 to 8% sales growth, 40% incremental contribution margins, and down here, somewhere between 2 and 4% additional growth as we reach down into this, above the peer margins, by the way, I stress, above the peer margins. And in adjacencies and acquisitions, we think we can get another 3 to 5% sales growth in the longer term. Just so people don't get worried about us reaching down on some slightly lower margin business, this is what happens if we model. This is our margin and return on invested capital up here. This is operating income down here. If we model 6.5% sales growth in our core with incremental contribution margin of 40%, and then look at the reaching down into the core, additional growth of 0 in 06, 1.5 in 07, and 2% in 08, this is what happens to the margin. That margin is actually still increased. We get enough leverage in the core to more than overcome any dilution we might get by reaching down and getting additional growth in the pieces below the core. Very quickly, fairly coordinated and well thought through, I hope, value creation strategy contains organic growth, acquisitions, divestitures, and capital. And last slide, number one priority, building our core, scale and relative share in our core. Second priority, international expansion. Third, following the mega trends out there and keeping technology important to us and steadily improve brand building and marketing. And from what we can see, growth is everywhere in our segments and lots more to be had. So thank you everybody for listening. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Questions?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, could you just explain, I mean, given you've got such a wide range of growth and a wide range of margins in all your six businesses, how do you allocate R&D or indeed acquisition within new areas or within those businesses? How do you decide what the cutoff level is? Are you happy to buy or invest in a business at the low end of the margin and hope that it grows, or you prefer an average?
Well, if you look at the margins back there, you'll see there none of them are a paltry. You know, they're all up close to 20%. And when you blend it all together and you have the kind of returns that we have, right now capital allocation has not been a problem. Now, if growth expands and we find many, many more places to invest, it will become a different matter. But generally speaking, we try to have the IRRs above 30% in our internal investments. Acquisitions are probably going to be more in the low to middle teens of that order. But so far it has not been an issue, and with the kind of cash generation capabilities we have, I'm not sure it's going to be an issue for quite some time. But maybe eventually we'll have to address it. Yes, sir.
Yes,
I think it is. Yes, we've even today we have probably between four, maybe six businesses I can think of immediately where we're just swamped with demand. And I think the truth of the matter is, being completely open about this, we believed that Six Sigma would always produce more capacity, always produce more productivity that we could use and deploy against growth. The reality was, yes, we got great margin improvement from Six Sigma, and we got some productivity improvements, but we failed to invest in the core. And so now we're in a position where one of the reasons why we haven't necessarily offered really spiffy growth rates initially is it will take us probably another 2 years to finish off investing in the core where we were underinvested in the past. I mean, that's the practical reality. It is what it is. So invest in the core clearly is a major focus for us. But also being much more active in following those mega trends and being much more active in following international growth and being I don't want to use the word aggressive, I'm searching for another term, certainly energetic perhaps in driving for growth as against driving just for margin improvement. Oh, no. Very much Six Sigma got us to where we are today. I think Six Sigma is one of those things that becomes like any other tool that we have, a financial tool, cycle time tools that we would use. I don't want Six Sigma to be thought of as something special. I think I want Six Sigma to be thought of as something normal that everybody should use. One thing that I've added to the mix here is lean manufacturing, and we think that's another place where we will get some better utilization of our plants. So they, you know, fundamentally are the elements of our growth plan that are different. Yes, sir.
When you launch a new product, what are the benchmarks you're looking at to assess the success of launching a new product?
Well, obviously, pretty much for every product that we launch, we have some kind of notional business plan. But again, speaking very openly, one of the challenges that a company like 3M has is 3M has typically invented its way into new markets. And I jokingly say inside our company that prediction is very difficult, especially when it concerns the future. So you're always wondering about the size of the market, and traditionally we've been very, very conservative in our investments. So we will often, and it's an issue that we wrestle with, we've often underinvested in our core and not perhaps always gone out and seized the market in as aggressive and energetic a way as we might. So typically the investments that we make are all driven by RR choices, and I went over those earlier. But I just do stress, when you're in the innovation business, it's not always easy to get that perfectly right, perfectly accurate.
How patient are you for a product? Let's say you have good confidence, a good product, but the market is a bit slow to react to the new product.
I think we have the alternative problem, that we don't kill products off often enough. I think sometimes we're maybe too patient. So I'm not necessarily saying that I want that to change a lot, because I think even in things like Post-it notes, you know, Post-it notes were invented in, what, 80, Matt?
Yeah.
1980. We've seen 25 years. Yet I don't think I saw my first Post-it note until about 1993. So you really do have to be patient with innovation, or alternatively, you know, you could end up exiting before a product reaches some kind of momentum.
As you're investing in the core business and trying to grow that over the next, or kickstart your organic growth over the next couple of years, what's going to happen to margins?
I don't think, well, from the diagram I showed you there, I don't think much is going to happen to margins. I think they will see a little growth in margins, but I don't think we'll see, you know, I mean, we picked up a point or a point and a half of margin growth a year. I think we can see some incremental gain in margins, but I don't think that we're going to see wholesale gain in margins. I mean, there comes a point that we all have to realize, when you have a company like 3M with blended margins at nearly 25%, it's quite a thing to behold, frankly speaking. And at some stage, you get to the point where you're in danger of attracting the very competition you fear. So growth for us, I think, is as that Gordon growth model showed, will take the first priority as far as we're concerned, from certainly from here on in. Yes, sir. David? No, David at back. Well, either or, I don't care. David, go ahead, please.
Yeah, You were mentioning use EVA as something when you look at acquisitions.
Yep.
How important is it for operations? How far down does it go in terms of business units?
It's the primary, and it's, you can't mention everything in these presentations, obviously, but it's the primary metric for determining compensation. So it's very much the heart and soul of the company. You mess up your working capital, then I'm afraid you're going to take a serious penalty on your compensation. So it's always a balanced approach as far as we're concerned. EVA is the fundamental metric that we use. Thank you for the question. Good point. David?
How would you describe the acquisition environment out there? Are you seeing prices bid up by private equity funds, or is it becoming more reasonable?
No, I think it's out there, David, and I think you knew the answer to the question before you asked it, which is why you asked it.
It was sort of a setup, because one of the things you said was that you really didn't think you'd be in the divesting mode,
mm-hmm.
but if the prices are right and the market is hot and willing to pay prices that are at premium levels, why would divestors not be more in the game plan?
Well, it depends, David, whether they are part and parcel of the core. I mean, this is not, I think I was saying to Patricia earlier today, this is not like a sort of replay of the Pink Floyd album Selling England by the Pound. Well, this is Selling Freedom by the Pound. I'm not looking to sell Freedom by the Pound. I'm looking to the growth for him. So if we can get good growth and good returns, David, then that's, I mean, what we own is what we know. You know, when you hire employees and you do acquisitions, you know what a resume is? A resume is a thing that records a person's career with all of their talents embellished and all of their failures removed. And it's the same with acquisitions. You know, acquisitions are always a lot better before you do them. So, so from my perspective, it's not that I'm not willing to do acquisitions, I am. But I'm always very suspicious. So better the devil that you know inside than one you don't. So I think great caution on acquisitions is the order of the day, but not so much caution that you can't do them, that you frighten yourself and freeze yourself into a position of inaction. I'm born in a part of England called Yorkshire. It's a Yorkshireman is a Scotsman who lost his generosity when moving south. So I am basically cheap. So I am cheap. But you know, the honest answer to your question, David, is we shake our heads when we look at some of the valuations that people are expecting, and it's purely a return on investment decision. Can I invest more money in the core that I know and with the kind of returns we've got? I mean, why wouldn't I? Or should I add the additional risk? So, yes, you're going to see acquisitions as part and parcel of our growth strategy, but I don't think you should imagine that it's going to be the overwhelming part of our growth strategy. It's going to be an incremental piece, but that's all. Yes, sir?
If you say the
it was another 2 years of core investment before you'll see the core growth rates pick up dramatically. Speaking as a Scotsman.
Thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody.
We can break for 10 minutes. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.